Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the Amrod Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lauffer, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The Amrod Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of the podcast. Of course, I'm your host, Adam Wilder. And today we have, as we do every time, we're really lucky on NucleCast. We have a great guest. Of course, I'm talking about Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Santino, who is the commander of the 576 Flight Test Squadron. And he is that guy who is responsible for ICBM tests. And of course, you're excited. I can hear everybody's excited right now, and they want to know more about, you know, how do we do it? Why do we do it? You know, what, you know, the details of, you know, testing Minuteman III. And so, of course, we've got the guy for that. So, Tony, thanks for joining us on NucleCast.
Thanks, Adam. It's a real pleasure to be a part of this. I know your storied and lustrous guests, to be a part of them. And amongst those is a real honor.
So let's open up by you telling us about the 576. You know, what's your history? What's the mission? Sort of, you know, what do you do?
Sure. The 576 Flight Test Squadron is responsible for the operations and management of the ICBM operational test mission. We're a part of a larger group, the 377th Test and Evaluation Group, and that is the only dedicated ICBM operational test group in the Defense Department. And for that reason, we have a really special, unique mission. And it's, as mentioned, operational testing of the fielded ICBM force. Primarily, we cut that into two parts, flight test, ground test. It's as simple as that. And end-to-end testing, starting with the deployed infrastructure, all the way to launching at T0, all the way to splashdown at the range where we test, we can get a good picture of the weapon system's health, wellness, effectiveness, and accuracy. And we report that data to key stakeholders in the nuclear enterprise, like Air Force Nuclear Weapons Center and Air Force Global Strike Command and United States Strategic Command. And those commanders then take a look at that data and they can map out sustainment trends and understand if the weapon system is performing as it should. That is a really important question. And so we're proud to provide that, both the effectiveness, sustainability answer, the suitability for the warfighter, and then the accuracy for the Ranger vehicles and the system itself as a whole.
So walk me through from sort of the very beginning of, hey, we want to do a test, mm-hmm. to what happens at the very end. Walk me through that process.
It's a fascinating process, in fact, and I think it's commonly misunderstood. So it's a great question. It begins, believe it or not, 5 years in advance. 5 years out, Air Force Global Strike Command publishes a forecast, and that's the ICBM test forecast. So we know 5 years in advance when the next launches will be, and so that's kind of like our directive for our tempo for our missions. On that forecast, it identifies the wing that's responsible for the test, where the asset will come from, the date, of course, that we plan to launch, and some other mission profile specifics, like what might be the reentry angle, what might be the RV type that we're going to use, and some of the profile specifics that are that we need to know for that specific test in that specific time. That's 5 years out. Okay. And the one thing I want to say about 5 year forecast is, if we get to a launch date and it happens to coincide with a current event that may be, happening in the international community, it is a complete coincidence. And that's the reason why, right? Because we forecast, we schedule these things 5 years in advance, and there is simply no dedicated reason to, for the Department of Defense to schedule a specific test coinciding with an event in current affairs. That's a coincidence. So 5 years out, we know the tests. Now we really start to get into the mission about 8 to 10 months out from the launch. And that's when we identify the sortie that will be selected for the test. Global Strike Command does sortie select. That's the milestone. So now we know the wing, the specific sortie, and we can start coordination and planning with the host wing. 3 months out from the launch, we start to receive shipments of that missile. And so the host wing is responsible for removing the nuclear materials. There's no nuclear materials at Vandenberg Space Force Base. And we remove the nuclear RVs before we ship components to Vandenberg. But the downstages, the guidance set, the propulsion system, rocket engine, and all the materials that come on a missile are shipped to Vandenberg. And we start to receive those shipments 3 months out, and between 3 and 1 month before the test, we start building that missile in a launch facility here at Vandenberg Space Force Base. And we do that alongside a task force from the host wing, operational maintainers and operators that are certified in the tasks for that effort. Between 1 month out and the day before is when we do checkouts, capability tests, confidence checks, range checks, make sure the weapon system is operating as it should, the guidance set is performing nominally, and that we're integrated with the Western Range. And the Western Range here on the California coast is essentially our gun range in the Pacific range that goes past Hawaii into the Reagan test site, which we'll talk about later, at the Marshall Islands and the Kwajalein Atoll. That range is what we operate on, and we have to find we have to abide by the rules and requirements of that range. We're all confident the range checks are good. We get to launch night, and launch night really begins about 3 hours before T0. And we're on console, and everyone's starting to turn on systems, and we're watching the missile health, and we're watching weather, and we're watching other things to make sure that we can get to a safe countdown. Once we're cleared for launch, a number of decision authorities are give us a go, and the weapon system's good. We'll launch, and at T0, the weapon system fires from Vandenberg Space Force Base, and less than 30 minutes later, it's re-entering the atmosphere at the Kwajalein Atoll. And that's all the flight profile. We monitor that. We install certain systems and telemetry and GPS and so on that's test unique, and that's important. There are some systems that are test unique, including the ability to command destruct if there's a safety issue while in flight. That's key as well. That doesn't exist on operational sorties up north. We install that alongside a task force here, and that's our sister squadron, the 377th Flight Test Missile Maintenance Squadron, installs those components on a test bird only. And then finally, re-entry, splashdown, and we know within a few hours how the performance of that missile has been conducted. We can watch in real time telemetry feeding from the bird, and then we get an initial accuracy report within just a few hours.
And so when you conduct these tests, help us understand what you learn from them. What are you looking for? What do you want to know?
Yeah. There's a number of things that we're learning from a flight test. And every flight test, we have a nominal mission profile that we compare the performance against. In fact, the 576 Flight Test Squadron has a dedicated engineering and analysis team who partners with the Air Force Nuke Weapon Center to watch and read the data, the telemetry streams that are coming from the instrumentation wafers and the integrated instrumentation sets to compare that against the nominal mission profile, what we expect versus what we see. And from there, we can identify whether it's expected in family performance, or if it's non-nominal, then we can start to identify potential issues with the weapon system. And that's vital for healthy sustainment of a weapon system that's been on alert for more than 50 years. Early identification of trends in performance give us a better picture of what we need to do to better sustain the system. So we're watching that while it's in flight. We're assessing accuracy downrange, and we're making or informing senior level decisions on what we need to do to correct the weapon system if there's a early identification of sustainment issues, or better maintain it, better operate it. And in some case, we'll even develop non-material solutions to more efficiently use and maintain it. And 576 is key in that as well. Now, the interesting thing about tests, though, is sometimes failure is success, as I said. Our job is to design a safe, effective profile so we can get the data and compare it against that expected result. But sometimes an anomaly occurring doesn't mean the test is not successful. It simply means performance wasn't as expected, and we can learn a lot from that. If the test is designed safely and effectively, we investigate the anomaly. We make smart decisions and recommendations to the Commander Global Strike Command and United States Strategic Command to overcome the problem. And then that helps us continue to provide effective, credible deterrent.
Now, I don't know if you can talk about it, but are there any sort of like real world examples where testing led you to learn something that then led you to change something?
Every test, thankfully, gives us good understanding of the weapon system's performance so that we can influence sustainment decisions later. So every test, even if it's nominal, gives us confidence in our models, or if there's a non-nominal indication, we can chase and understand that to figure out why and how, and then make actual changes to the weapon system. Now, I mentioned this is a 50-plus-year-old weapon system, first deployed in 1970. Even though it's that old, it has been upgraded and changed and modified, and we've gone through significant component upgrades to give us the modern system that we have today that's providing that capable and credible deterrent. So all those changes and upgrades were as a result of identified trends, sustainment issues, and clues that we found during testing. I don't want to say specific examples because a lot of those are sensitive, but what I can say is we continue, and in 2023, we have found the 576 alongside enterprise partners in the ICBM business, found actual findings, I'll say findings, that could only have been identified in operational testing that influences the total health and wellness of the weapon system. We fix those issues, we get the weapon system healthy, and it's back to providing capable, credible deterrence.
So with the recent announcement that the Sentinel program, you know, the costs are increasing, there's been a renewed call for the elimination of the ICBM, you know, or to life extend the Minuteman III and then ultimately just get rid of ICBMs altogether. That's sort of the mantra. And my question for you is sort of, as somebody who, you know, knows the Minuteman III well, can you speak to the importance of a new Sentinel? What does that mean? Why do we need it? And what is it going to give us that Minuteman or a life extended Minuteman will not?
It's a great question. It's really important. I'll say this: recapitalization and modernization is not an option. It is a necessity. And the Minuteman III continues to provide capable, credible, responsive nuclear deterrence. It's our ground-based leg that is the most responsive in the triad. But the nation's using the same decades-old tools and weapon systems we've had available during the Cold War. And options to further extend legacy systems that are decades beyond their planned service, it's simply not viable. In fact, the missile wings logged over 2.4 million maintenance hours over the last 5 years. We have that metric. And it's a 30% increase over the past 5 years. We've got a maintenance backlog up north. Models predict 25% increase in maintenance requirements over the next FYDP, that's Future Year Defense Program. And the Minuteman III sustainment execution budget increased 17% over the last 5 years. So all those indicate the only solution to Minuteman III sustainment issues is Sentinel. It's been studied. It's been proven. It's the answer. Sentinel is a critical capability that's going to underpin the United States strategic nuclear deterrence strategy. And it's fundamental to the security of our nation. We have to have it. It's fundamental also to our allies and our continued way of life. So someone who is this close to the ICBM community, who's studied and is familiar with Minuteman III, I know you are as well. We understand that graceful Minuteman end of life is important, but it must be complemented with on-time delivery of Sentinel.
Yeah. So we're at that time in the show where we have to take a quick break, so we'll do that. But when we come back, what is the most interesting, perhaps unknown or underappreciated fact or set of facts or sort of tidbits about the 576 and sort of what you do and the unique mission that it performs? So I want you to think about that. And we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to NucleCast.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the AMLAW Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back, and Tony had a second to think about sort of some interesting things that you, the listeners, might be interested in. And so now that we're, you know, we're back, Tony, and what would be those interesting tidbits that, you know, listeners who may be unfamiliar with ICBM flight tests would go, huh, I never thought of that. I would have never known that. What kind of, you know, little tidbits do you have for the listeners?
I can think of a few, but the one thing that I think that's not just underappreciated, but maybe potentially unknown about the 576 flight test squadron is because ICBM test compounds proficiency onto simple operations, maintenance, security, and the simple basics of ICBM business. We take that a step further in test. And in order to test the weapon system, you really, really have to know it. And so we spend extra time understanding the engineering, the design, the component level construction and implementation into the greater weapon system integration. And for all those reasons, we actually elevated professional development of our airmen to a mission priority. And so it's the 576 Flight Test Squadron's mission, amongst those things that we talked about earlier before the break, to develop nuclear enterprise leaders. So we have a program that's known as Top Hand. It's kind of like our vehicle for professional development. And the members of the squadron are responsible for developing into enterprise leaders so that when they PCS, they leave the squadron and they continue their career, they have a greater understanding of the weapon system as a whole. That's a charge to our whole mission. It's not just a bonus of coming to the 576 is our job. And so I like to talk about that because we're growing nuclear leaders at the 576. It's great. It's easy, too, because you're just so close to the engineering design. Like I said, the complex weapon system components of the ICBM weapon system. It is truly rocket science. And we're taking a little step further. It's kind of rocket surgery when it comes to anomaly analysis and understanding issues as we're building up and partnering with our enterprise mission partners. So that's a cool part of the 576 that I'm very proud of. That maybe folks just don't know about. Another thing I guess we'll talk about is, and I hope that we can talk about as soon, is downrange, the Reagan test site. It's part of that professional development to visit the Western Range assets and to get a better understanding of how those sensors inform the test and how they play. Because ICBM testing, as you can understand, is a very niche part of the Defense Department. And for that reason, we want to we are the experts, and we take that very seriously. We need to understand all the assets that are involved in that. So part of the development is we'll have folks that partner with the Army Reagan test site at Kwajalein Atoll go down there and take a look at the sensors and understand how they work and perform so that we can be better testers as a whole.
So why don't we go ahead and do that, and let's just talk about Quaj. And, you know, there's the contractor that operates it is a company called Gen Next. And so I see stuff pop up all the time, you know, where they're looking for engineers and technicians, you know, to go out to Quaj. And so I sort of pay attention a little bit to what's out there. And if they ever need, you know, a guy with my skills, I might be interested in spending a year or two. But, you know, it's certainly an interesting place. So walk us through, you know, what is Quaj and what does it do and what's its purpose and what is life like out on an atoll in the Pacific?
There's a lot of pieces to that. So I'll just say that I have visited the Reagan test site. It is at Kwajalein Atoll, and the Kwajalein Atoll is part of the Greater Marshall Island chain, which is in the Pacific. It's about double the distance from California to Hawaii, 4,190 nautical miles. It's quite a ways. And it is, you know, just a few degrees north, if I remember correctly, from the equator. So it's right there in the Pacific tropics. And it's very isolated, no question about it. It's an old volcanic rim. So many different islands make up this chain, this atoll. The Army owns the range assets there. That's the Reagan test site. And that's a complex of sensors along the island chain that support a various myriad of mission sets. The 576, the 377 TAG, and the ICBM testing profile is just one of those. We're just one customer that utilizes the sensors and utilizes the Army assets there. But it's a national imperative there that those are so unique and so special. They support a number of defense missions. I visited when I was a young captain, part of the 576 Flight Test Squadron. I got to go, just like I would mention about the professional development program. And we got to spend some time there on the range. For someone like you who might want to take a job there or might be curious about living on the atoll, I highly recommend visiting first just to get an idea. It's a gorgeous place, and the people there are really special, and they're passionate about what they do. But it is a very different lifestyle than on the continental United States, as you can imagine. Some of the simple life pleasures you get used to, they may not be accessible there. And you make it a norm to try to get your visitors to bring you like the beverage that you miss or some at home niceties that you used to have that you simply don't have at the island. No, that's a little tougher there. And you know, that's part of the uniqueness of the Quaj is not just the location, not just the remoteness, but also it's the permanent party there are part of the mission. So the Army personnel and the civilian personnel that work and operate at the Quaj are part of the RTS mission. So getting there is only half the battle. Staying there is certainly part of it as well.
And so for the sensors, what do they provide you? What do you exactly get out of it?
Right. There's a various complement of sensors at Quaj that help us identify the reentry vehicle as it's part of the mission profile while it's in flight. These are looking up in the night sky, and they're trying to identify and find the RVs and the bodies of the missile while it's flying over the horizon from the Quad, from California over Hawaii, but not directly over Hawaii, and into the range area, the target area. These sensors are looking in the night sky and trying to pick up the reentry vehicle to pinpoint that location and provide that information to the other sensors, which are assessing various characteristics of flight, you know, like speed, location, and other various data points. So they're watching that come in, and they can inform the other sensors so that we can get an idea of accuracy and location. Now, one key sensor, or I should say two key sensors, are the Kwajalein Missile Impact Scoring System, KMIS, which is a series of underwater hydrophones that are on the northeast edge of the atoll, and are... They're pointed up at the surface of the water, so when a telemetered RV comes in and it splashes down, it can trilaterate that position and give us really accurate locational data. That's how we assess accuracy. The other sensor is the LIDS system, the Lawrence Livermore Independent Diagnostic Scoring System. Of course, there's acronyms within acronyms in our business. And that's a Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory asset that is essentially a series of remote rafts. They're rafts with neutron detectors and high-speed cameras and other drones that keep position. And when a high-fidelity RV comes in to the test range, those rafts are set up so they can assess accuracy. They can see specific characteristics of the RV performance. And in a high-fidelity RV, those again, none of these have nuclear material on those on the RVs, but high-fidelity RVs do explode and provide us important information about had a nuclear event been intended? Would it have provided the intended effects? And so we can learn from that and take a look at things like shape, speed, height of burst, and so on to understand if the profile against expected data was performed as intended.
Yeah, that's kind of a important aspect of weapons effects, is that we don't necessarily want things to blow up when they hit the ground. We oftentimes want them to blow up above the ground. And so, making sure that we can get that desired height of burst, because height of burst matters a lot, is one of those important things. So that's certainly good to hear. Now, I want to switch topics, and I want to bring out my good friend, Bob the Genie. And as I rub my magic lamp.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, Bob pops out. He grants all guests three wishes related to the topic at hand. Of course, no unlimited wishes, world peace, untold wealth. None of that. So, Tony, Bob has now given you wish number one. What is that wish?
Wish number one. I think I'll go grand scheme on this wish and just say on time budget, predictable federal budgeting. Just as the secretary and other defense senior decision makers have said time and time again, this is a critical issue. It is becoming felt at the smallest level of command, flight and squadron level. We're starting to feel effects, and it's a critical issue to national security. Just having a budget, having appropriations, being able to have predictable funding. And here's the bottom line: lacking budget today can create a nuclear triad capability gap, which really is a true threat to deterrence and global stability. That's why it's wish number one. It's the most important thing to me. And we're feeling it, like I said, at the lower echelons of command. We need change, and we need predictable budgeting.
Okay, so that's a good one. You know, it's funny that you offer that one, because you're certainly not the first NucleCast guest who's had that as a wish. So given Bob's, abilities, I'm pretty confident.
It's strength in numbers.
Yeah. I hear a budget's coming, by the way. So
yeah, we're hopeful. I want to say we're hopeful, but we can't just rest on hope, especially in the nuclear deterrence business. We have to act. And so we genuinely need that. That's why it's wish number one. It's the most important.
Yeah. Okay. So wish number two.
Wish number two. We were just talking about RTS, the Reagan test site in Quaj. A lot of your listeners may be aware that not long ago, a couple months ago, there was some pretty dangerous weather that caused damage to Roy Namur, which is the island of the chain that houses and maintains some of the important sensors for our mission set. There was a tsunami-like waves that caused a lot of damage, and the damage assessment there is ongoing. But really, wish number two is for Quaj, for speedy recovery, the RTS, the Reagan test site. The people living and working there, like I mentioned, they're passionate about their job, but the weather and the effects created because of that had some damage. We're still assessing that. We need that sensor suite. We need the Reagan test site to be operational for our mission. I know they care about their mission, and we do too. So ours just being one of those missions, I'm sure that wish is shared by other defense agencies and partners. But speedy recovery and minimal damage would be my wish number two at the Reagan test site.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm sort of digressing, but I was in Ruidoso, New Mexico, which is sort of, if you're from Texas, Ruidoso is the closest place to ski to the state of Texas. And so I have a cousin that lives there, and we walk downtown, and there's a winery that has a tasting room. And I started talking to the guy working there, and he had lived at Quaj for 11 years and has now retired. 'Cause if you spend that much time at Quaj, you can retire. And he was talking about what a great place it was. So, to bring up, to have a lot of damage done from, weather, it's certainly one that, for a remote place, it makes it even harder.
It does. So, yeah. Just assessing the damage and then getting the resources needed for recovery, it makes it that much more difficult when it's in the middle of the Pacific. And we've heard that from theater leaders in the Pacific before. Logistics, support, and recovery in this particular instance is one of the most difficult things. And it's very true in this case. And, I'll echo senior decision leaders as well with regard to climate and the effects of weather on our assets. It's becoming more of a concern. And this is a tangible effect of that. Violent, extreme weather causing actual damage to a national asset.
Yeah. Okay, so wish number three.
Wish number three. We've talked about it already, but Minuteman III being on alert since 1970, over 50 years. Testing is more important than ever, in my opinion, and understanding and identifying early sustainment trends so we can correct them before they become problems is our number one job. So graceful Minuteman end of life is my wish, and on time deployment and on alert of Sentinel is part of that wish. The transition of this weapon system makes it a really exciting time to be in the nuclear enterprise, because this has been a bedrock foundational deterrence asset for our nation and for our allies for decades. And so seeing the evolution of the ICBM weapon system and the ground-based leg of the triad is great to be a part of this. But we need to continue testing, to continue identifying sustainment and trend issues, and we need an on-time delivery of Sentinel. We're going to do everything we can to find and fix those problems before they become issues. But it's just simply not designed to be on alert this long. It was a 10-year design cycle for Minuteman. So we need a safe, capable replacement, and that's Sentinel.
Yeah, I hear you. And it, let's hope that sort of, what's driving costs is sort of the unplanned infrastructure challenges that we're facing. And let's hope we can sort of come up with some very ready ways to address those, address them quickly, and to make sure that even though the missile's on time, we can also get that infrastructure, those modifications done in less expensively and on time.
Right, because the infrastructure is in a lot of cases older than the weapon system, right? That's been deployed and was created before Minuteman III, before Minuteman I in a lot of cases. And because of that, it's underground, it's austere, it's in a difficult sustainment environment. And so that infrastructure, if we're going to use some of it or all of it for Sentinel, it has to be maintained, it has to be assessed. And you're right, it's older than I think a lot of folks realize, and therefore some of those costs are a part of it. But on-time deployment is so important to our deterrence.
So as we end the show, do you have sort of a walking away message for the listeners?
I do. Our number one job at the 576 and the 377th TEG is to test the current and future capability of the ICBM force. It's important. It's very important. It's the reason why we can identify issues early is predictable and sustained testing. But there's another reason why it's important, and it's closely related to the first. You and I, Adam, know that deterrence is a concept that's kind of simple, but actually deterring adversaries takes a lot of work. It takes work every single day. And we know that deterrence is a function of capability and will. Operating, maintaining, securing ICBMs every day in the missile field is proof of that capability. And operational testing is part of the capability piece. We need to know that the hardware we're using works so that if the president were to give a lawful order to launch, there's no doubt the intended effect is created. And the 377th TEG's role in that piece is creating safe and effective tests to verify the system performance and accuracy. The data we give to Nuke Weapon Center, Global Strike, and STRATCOM informs the commanders on that system's reliability and makes informed decisions on sustainment. And that genuinely influences our deterrence. And when we do this, by the way, when we flight test and when we ground test, we do it on the world stage. There's a number of audiences watching. The American people, our allies, and our adversaries are watching us, and it's proof that the weapon system works, and it's accurate, it's safe, and it's credible. And that all influences deterrence every day. And we're proud of that at the 576. We're proud of that at the TEG. And it makes our force stronger. And when our mission is understood like that for your listeners, we think that influences deterrence as well.
All right, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Santino, commander of the 576 Flight Test Squadron, thanks for joining us on this episode of NucleCast.
Thanks, Adam. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you on the next episode. Great discussion about the 576. You know, Tony, as an interesting mission, you know, that's sort of one of those, it's the only place you do it. So it's, you're a lucky set of missileers and maintainers if you get to go out to the flight test squadron. So that's a great one. Hopefully you, the listeners, enjoyed the discussion and learned a little bit about ICBM testing. It's kind of a cool thing.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Channington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunthal. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.